and adoration. He gave praise to God. There has to be praise in our prayer to God. And again, there has to be that mindset that praises God for what he is. Sometimes that's even more important than asking him, because does God know our needs before we even ask him? Yes, he does. So you're not going to change God's mind. So don't spend all your time on asking him for things that are already going to happen. Why don't you spend some of that time in praising him? Telling him how good he is. That's what Habakkuk learned. He went from, well, I'll go back to it, from where he was in chapter 1 to now where he is in chapter 3. But the last thing that I like about Habakkuk in this prayer, that his ways became God's ways. God's ways became his way. He had a heart with God, and it was oneness with God. When chapters 1 and 2 came, it wasn't like that. But he developed that oneness with God, that God's ways were his ways now. And that's the way our prayers should be. Our prayers should be, God's will be done. And then in verses 3 through 15, we looked at it last week, I think, or we had Lord's Table a couple weeks ago. He looked at the mighty acts of God. And that's what verses 3 through 15 talk about, the mighty acts of God. He just went over in his mind some of the great acts of God, from creation to the Exodus. Those are the two things that come up. And again, I really believe he thinks probably the greatest miracle that God ever did was the parting of the Red Sea and then the wiping out of the Egyptian army. And so he goes over in his mind these great miracles. And again, these were way in the past. You say, Pastor, those are way in the past. I wasn't even there. Neither was Habakkuk. He wasn't there at creation, but he knows the power of it. He wasn't there with the Exodus out of Egypt, but he understands the greatness of it. And that's why you can go back to the Old Testament. He talked about the sun standing still. He talked about when Joshua asked the sun. He talked about the great victories that God gave over all the nations there, where Israel, I believe, apart from Ai, never lost a soldier. That's just personally what I believe. And you say, how is that even possible? Well, with God, all things are possible. And Habakkuk's beginning to learn it. Then he ends, this is the end. His personal testimony in verses 16 through 19. This is his heart. And again, and I'm going to read it for you. And when I heard my belly trembled and my lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. And when he cometh up unto the people, he will invade them with his troops. He's remembered, judgment's coming. That's what it's talking about. He's still broken, but judgment's coming upon. He understands now that Israel is going to be judged. But then he says this. What a change. Although the fig tree shall not blossom. And that's what Babylon was going to do. They're going to destroy everything. And he said, although the fig tree not blossom, neither shall the fruit be in vines, and the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flocks shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. He says, I know we're going to lose everything. I know everything's going to be gone to my beloved Israel. But then listen, he said, yet now I will rejoice in the Lord, and the joy in the God of my salvation. For the Lord is my strength, and he will make my feet like hind's feet, deer's feet. And he'll make me walk upon my high places. What a difference. What an attitude. You know, the cycle of thought is completed in verse 16. Again, he was still filled with fear and dread and anguish for his people. He knew judgment was coming. And he knew it was going to be severe judgment. And you can see that in his heart. And he didn't lose that fact. He didn't lose that mindset that he loved his Israel. He loved Judah. He loved Jerusalem. He loved everything about them. And so you still see the pain and the anguish that goes from him. Because he knows his homeland is going to be overrun. And he knows it's by the Chaldean invaders, Babylon. And he feels it deeply. But out of this comes that trust in spite of the coming trouble. And though the enemy come in and they're going to destroy the fig trees, they're going to destroy the vines and the olive trees, the things that make Israel what they are. They're going to mar the fields. They're going to carry off the flocks from the fold and the herds, and there'll be no animals left. I mean, they're going to come in and just wipe out the land, wipe out Jerusalem, wipe out the walls, wipe out the temple, wipe out the city. They're going to destroy everything. Yet, the difference, he says, now I can rejoice in the Lord. And I can joy in his salvation. Because the Lord, he's in control. I can see his strength. I can see his power. He's going to make me to mount up with, as Isaiah say, with wings as eagles. He's going to give me hinds feet as deer to. And I guess that's the illustration. The deer are so. And in those of you who've hit a deer in the recent times, they come out of nowhere. They leap over fences. They can do amazing things. Their speed and agility. He says that's what God's going to give me. Even with the destruction the Chaldeans were about to carry out, he shows a confidence in God that his servant will carry him through. And not only will he have the peace in the hour of trial, but joy in spite of the destruction of the land. You hear me? Not only will he have peace that he knows God's in control, but he'll have joy. Folks, you know I've talked about this. And if Lord tarries, I think we'll have an election coming up in 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks away, folks. I think this is the most important election America's ever had. But you know what? If it doesn't go like I want it to go, now, after studying this book, my God's still in control. And not only will he give me peace, he'll give me joy. I'm not going to lose my joy if Mr. Trump loses. I don't have to lose my joy. You say, but America's going to go in a total different direction. Yeah, you're right. I sat through that. Peg was there. I don't know if any of you else were there at Great Reset 2. Very little disappointing to me because I sat through Great Reset 1. But there were so many people there that didn't get Great Reset 1. He took all the time to go over Great Reset 1. I had to leave at a certain time because I wanted to go see Riley running her last cross-country race. By the way, she did very good. We got there just in time to see the last 300 yards. And I'm glad I did because she finished very, very good. Two girls have whooped up on her this whole season, and she was as close to them this time as she's ever been. She did very well. But then so I had to leave. So I only got to hear half of the Great Reset 2. Boy, if you listen to this guy, you could get depressed. He sees what the globalists want to do, the one world government, the WEF and the WHO, health organizations, World Economic Forum, all these things. And they're bound and determined. This is their goal. And I'm telling you, this is their goal. I don't know how they're going to do it, and I don't think they will. But their goal is to get the world down to 1 billion people by 2030. Do you realize that's almost 6 billion people have to die in the next 6 years? That's a billion people a year. And they're strategizing how to do it, folks. Now, you know what I think? I think the rapture is going to happen. And God's going to give them their numbers. They're going to get all the numbers they want. You read the first 3.5 years of the tribulation. A whole bunch of billions of people die. So maybe they're just being prophetic a little bit. But you know what? I left there and had to drive, and Pastor Jaius and I drove up. He drove and I drove because he lives 5 minutes from there. And I had that time to think. And I said, boy, There's some wicked times coming if the Lord tarries his return. But you know what? I can have peace. And I know God will give me joy. And so I'm not going to get frustrated. See, Habakkuk started out in chapter 1. Remember chapter 1? And I hope you can put this in your mind because I can't get it out of mine. But remember, he accused Israel of being so wicked, Judah being so wicked. And he said, God, are you going to deal with them? Now, he'd seen revival before. God, are you going to deal with them? Are you going to send revival? God, you need to deal with them. That was his attitude in chapter 1. And God told him at the end of chapter 1, yeah, I'm going to deal with them. I'm raising up Babylon to go in and take their hides down. But God, that's not what I asked. I asked for revival. How can you raise up and bless a pagan, wicked city like Babylon and bless them and make them great and make them powerful to come in and destroy your people? These are the Jews where Christ will come. This is your people. How can you do that, God? And he got almost angry with God. This is Habakkuk. This was a little bit of me before I started this series. I asked God a million times, how can you let this go on? God said, Habakkuk, I got everything in control. And I think at first Habakkuk said, I don't believe it. So you know what Habakkuk did? Chapter 2, he went to the tower. Remember? Got alone. Went away from all the people, all Judah, everybody. Got alone. He saw that. God began to show him that God's in control of all the nations. And God has a perfect plan. And God has a perfect timetable when it'll all take place. And it's not about this kingdom or these nations. It's about that kingdom. And all of a sudden, the light began to come on. And in that tower, he stopped to think. Number 2, he began to focus on the greatness of his God. He began to think about God and the attributes of God and the goodness of God and what he is. And his faithfulness and his power and his immutability, his omnipotence and omniscience and his eternality. And he's the God of creation and the God who sustains everything. And then number 3, he began to apply that to his situation. God can't make a mistake because he's omniscient and he's sovereign. He can do as he chooses. And then he said, if I couldn't get past that, here's the kicker. He just said, I'm just going to take it by faith. The just shall what? Live by faith. He said, I'm going to trust you, God. I don't understand it all. But I know in your omniscience and your power and your greatness, the just shall live by faith. And then the rest of chapter 2, God showed him how he was going to judge Babylon because of what they did to Israel. There's a price Babylon had to pay for what they did to Jerusalem. There was a price Egypt had to pay for what they did to Israel. Everybody pays a price. There's going to be a price Iran has to pay. And Hezbollah and all these nations that are attacking Israel today, even though Israel isn't where God needs them to be, they're still God's people. I'm telling you, they're going to pay a price, folks. You don't have to worry about it. And if the United States doesn't get on board, that's peanuts compared to God. They would much rather face the United States than they would a holy God. And all of a sudden, God shows him exactly what's going to happen to Babylon. And God begins to reveal some things to him. And I think that's true in your life with what's coming up. If it doesn't go the way we want it to go, and if it doesn't go the way I hope it goes, I think there's going to be disaster either way it goes. There could be a revolution both ways. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know this. I have a God who's in complete control. It's not the globalists who are going to be excited. It's God and his plan and his perfect timetable and his perfect plan. Because it's not about the United States. You know what it's about? His kingdom. That's what he's preparing us for. His kingdom. So Habakkuk, with all this, he ends it with a prayer. A prayer of humility. A prayer of, I don't think before this Habakkuk knew how to pray. But God has changed his whole mindset. And now it's a prayer of humiliation, brokenness. It's a prayer of worship and adoration. And all of a sudden, God's ways are now his ways. And he knows if it happens, that's what he needs to do. That's why I'm excited in the next 2 weeks just to pray for God's will to be done. Because I don't know if it's God's will Mr. Trump wins. I don't know that. I'd like that. For my grandchildren's sake, for my sake, for people who are suffering all over the United States, and I hope he wins. But if he doesn't, I want God's ways to be my ways. And so I've taken the time during this time to think about how great God is. I have a few stories I told you I could share with you. When I traveled Neighborhood Bible Time, God let me see some things that I thrilled my soul that probably some of you have never got to see. The closest thing to revival broke out in two meetings I had. Again, I didn't tell you this, I don't think, but we were in a meeting that was taken over by a rough crowd of kids, teenagers. These are teenagers. This is the roughest crowd I've ever seen out in Maine. Roughest crowd I've ever seen. We came in and played volleyball, and boy, I made a call against the one team, and I thought they were going to string me up. They all gathered in for the preaching time. I wasn't even halfway through my preaching. The first kid walked down the aisle and fell on his face. The next one did. I didn't know what to do, so I just kept preaching. One by one, almost 30 kids trickled down here, trusted Christ as their Savior. It was one of the most awesome things I've ever seen. I could tell you stories. Baltimore, Maryland, I saw the Spirit of God work. We were trying to entertain inner city Baltimore kids. 300 in a church building about this size. The kids were trying to entertain them. They were trying to sing to them. These kids were bouncing off the wall, standing up, because they just came for the pizza. They were standing up, and my brother came to me, and he said, "You're preaching." He said, I ain't touching this with a 10-foot pole. You're preaching. I'm what? I've told you this, I think, before, but about 10 kids on the back row, by their own admission, walked up and walked out the door. I said, I'd leave too if I could. They got on the back stairway there, and they fell on their face before God and began to pray for these souls of these kids. I stood up there to preach, and I'm telling you something. You could have heard a pin drop. 62 kids trusted Christ as their Savior that night. I've never seen anything like it. Yeah, I have some pretty good things I can go back on. But nothing like Israel. Nothing like creation. But that's what he did. He went back and remembered the greatness of his God. He took his focus off the problem and put his focus on God. That's what I'm telling you. Get your focus off the election. Put it on God, folks. And then he said, God, I know for Israel bad things are going to happen. You're going to take everything away from us that are so dear to us. But I know you have a perfect plan and a perfect timetable. And I know, so I rejoice in everything you're going to do. That's a whole different Habakkuk than chapter 1. He said, okay, you are God. You do whatever you see fit. And I know I'm going to rejoice. And I know I'm going to have the peace of God. And I know I'm going to have my joy. Because the world can't take that from me. That comes from God. And so, whatever happens, whatever you choose to do for God, I've changed my mind. I'm 100% with you. You just have your will and your way. You know, I always wonder this. There's one of those things I write down in my little card. How much did his message affect Israel? I can't tell you that. But I can tell you how much it affected Habakkuk. He wasn't writing about what affected Israel. He was writing about what affected him and what changed his life. And so, I don't know how much this study of Habakkuk is going to help you. But I know how it helped me. And if for no other reason, that's why God led me to do this. Because he knew I needed to have the right mindset with this most important election coming up. However it turns out, I can promise you this, my God is in control. And I'm going to trust him. And I'll preach with the same intensity next Sunday, the Sunday after election, no matter how it comes out. And I'll be just as happy and joyful as I am today. Because my God is an awesome God. That's what Habakkuk would tell you today. So, I hate to leave it. But now I've already prepared Zephaniah. And that's pretty good too. Not quite as good as Habakkuk. But pretty good. We'll go into the next book. The reason I'm telling you all this is nobody really pays attention to these Old Testament minor prophets. But to me, these aren't minor prophets. These are major prophets. Because they have a message to share in probably the deeper America grows into sin and becomes wicked, the more we gather from these prophets. And so I understand now why God, maybe not for you, but for me, why God put me and laid it upon my heart to teach you these Old Testament prophets. They're tremendous books. And I hope when you read them next time, is if you read the Bible through or you come across and read them, it'll give you a little better understanding. Because just to read it, you don't get a lot out of it. You can read, I read Zephaniah and read Zephaniah and read Zephaniah and said, I don't know what to say. But then I took it verse by verse. Really, word by word. It's a pretty amazing book, too. And I hope it'll be a help to you as it is to me. You'll probably hear another message out of the book of Habakkuk if the election goes the way I think it is. Because this is the core group here. There's a whole bunch of people that need to hear this message that aren't here. Not because it comes from me, but there's going to be I think there'll be more suicides either way the election goes than ever before. I think people are going to become so distraught, you're going to see death become a reality in a way you've never seen it before. Either side that wins. We only think if we lose, then we know. But I'm telling you, if the Democrats lose, and Trump were to win, they think the world is coming to an end. They're going to fight for it. But you know what? I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Because my joy doesn't have to change. My peace doesn't have to change. Nothing about me has to change. Because my God is in control. Let Habakkuk prepare your heart as it did mine. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the word of God. I didn't think somebody who wrote this thousands of years ago could impact me like it has, but it has. Because what Habakkuk faced is exactly what we faced, but I think it's what people faced in World War I and World War II as well. Some of these trying times when they saw millions and millions of Jews massacred, when millions of people lost their lives, they saw the threat of communism taking over the world. Habakkuk was good then. And as the United Nations and the world global stage wants to take over the world, Habakkuk's good today. And so I'm not going to fret. I'm not going to fear. But I'm going to rejoice in the God of my salvation. But that only comes when we do what Habakkuk did, folks. He got alone.